Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Wait, wait, wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between. You're in for quite a ride. And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety. Today, we're excited to have a very special guest, Hillary Scheinbaum, the brilliant mind behind GoingDry.co. And Going Dry is a platform that revolutionizes how we view and experience socializing without alcohol. And it has a mission to create more inclusive and enjoyable experiences. Hillary and her team organize non-alcoholic pop-up bars, panels, and private events. They also curate non-alcoholic menus for bars, restaurants, and hotels, and provide engaging mocktail classes and sessions from New York City to Maui. Going Dry is making waves and changing the conversation around sobriety.
Hillary is also the author of the best-selling book, The Dry Challenge, and the Going Dry Workbook, Exercises and Activities, which offer valuable resources for those on their journey to sobriety. Today, we are excited to delve into the inspiring work of Going Dry, explore how to enjoy a vibrant social life without alcohol, and learn more about Hillary's personal journey and insights. Welcome, Hillary.
Yay, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yay. Can you start just by sharing a little bit about your personal journey?
So I have to admit, I'm not 100% sober, although I drink significantly less than I used to. But back in my former life, I was a red carpet reporter, and I was regularly interviewing every celebrity, like the Kardashians and Brad Pitt and Meryl, every housewife that you've seen on Bravo. And that was like my quote unquote day job, but it all started at like 5 p.m. and would sometimes go until 2 a.m. if I was attending after parties after these red carpets and then movie premieres and late into the morning hours. So during the day, I was also freelancing in the food and beverage space primarily, and a lot of that coverage was about alcohol. So I would cover like the new cocktail trend. I would go to wine tasting. Everything in that like realm basically open to being covered by, you know, yours truly. And I was writing for Eater and USA Today and AM New York, which is a local New York paper. And eventually I actually had a column in Forbes about women in the wine, beer, and spirit industries. So all of that considered, when a friend and I had dinner in late 2016 and he asked me, A, did I have any New Year's resolutions? I said no, because I don't believe in, you know, changing on January 1st. I think that you can do it any time of the year, any time of the week, any time of the month. And B, he asked me if I had heard about this thing called Dry January, to which I kind of like internally scoffed because it was so not in alignment with my career or my lifestyle. You know, being a 20-something work and just having fun with my friends and going on dates and not having to drive. So with all of that, on New Year's Eve 2016, I was wishing him a happy new year and I proposed that we engage in a dry January bet. And so he agreed. And the premise was that whoever drank in the month of January would have to buy the other person, the winner, dinner anywhere in New York City, which is pretty pricey. Long story short, he ended up drinking about like 3 weeks in, two and a half weeks in. And I made it the entire month and I felt so amazing. Like, it sounds so cliche, but it changed my perspective on so many things and ended up changing my career and my life, and nothing was ever the same. So since then, I've done Dry January every year since, and certainly a number of sober months in between the longer stretches of time. And yeah, it's kind of set off a domino effect in both my life and my career. Yeah, ended up writing a book and now a second book.
Yeah. Wow, that's incredible. What is moderating then look like for you?
It's interesting. I think that it has evolved over time. So, you know, the first year, I don't think a lot of things changed. And in present day, if I am interested in having a glass of wine, I will have about half a glass and that's it. A lot of what I preach is trying non-alcoholic beverages as a substitute for alcoholic ones, whether you are, you know, completely sober or if you are doing a dry month, or even if you are currently drinking and you want to alternate just to drink less. And so often I will compare the, you know, original version of a cocktail to the non-alcoholic so that I can speak, you know, in an educated way about what is the most comparable. Recently, I think it's getting better. Like, there is a bit of a difference between wines specifically, and especially red wines are really hard to match the taste of the body and things like that. So I always want to be honest when people ask me, they're like, what's your favorite non-alcoholic wine? And I'm like, all right, well, this is going to be the closest you're going to get to this one. But if you like this, you know, almost like being like a non-alcoholic psalm in a way. But yeah. I it's very rare that I drink, and even, you know, the occasions where I find myself being like, here's a reason to celebrate, I'm like, this is great because I'm not going to have a hangover tomorrow. So
not having a hangover, I guess, was a benefit of your first dry January that you did. But as you've done that every year, what are some of more of the unexpected benefits that you've discovered since moderating?
Yeah. Hangovers are killer. I think a big one for me, especially the first year, was my quality of sleep. You know, the first time I did a dry gin, I didn't think much about how alcohol was affecting my sleeping patterns. Even if I was just like drinking on the weekends, it really didn't occur to me that it was like carrying over. And also, I was getting like 4 to 5 hours of sleep a night and being able to just like run on adrenaline as like a 20 something. And it wasn't until, you know, 10 days into my first dry January where I started sleeping like 7 to 8 hours a night. And I realized like, oh, it's not just because I'm anxious and live in a crazy busy city and loud near my apartment. It was a lot to do with, you know, waking up in the middle of the night and just how alcohol affects your body. You're first dozing off and then suddenly you're brain is and body is in overdrive and, you know, everything's kind of kicking in. So that was a big thing too.
So sleep was better. It sounds like anxiety, like you noticed that your anxiety less.
My skin was much better. Like, my friends are always like, what are you using as far as skincare? And I'm like, just stop drinking. It's still too far more like cleanser. I also think like financial savings was a big one. Even it's so funny because a lot of, I should say, like, you know, every now and then people will say like, oh, it's fine. Like, we're bringing our own booze. It's like less expensive. Or, you know, if somebody else is buying cocktails or like and treating you to them, like, that's so nice. But also the transportation to get to and from somewhere. Also, like the munchies at night, the next morning when you're eating something greasy and getting it delivered because you're too hungover. All of those expenses obviously do not exist when you're not drinking. And yeah, there was just so many. I think like a lot of my friendships and relationships changed at first, not necessarily for the better, but in the long run for the better, because weeded out people who are not like respectful of goals, and also that I realized I didn't have as much in common with when, you know, we weren't reading together. So a lot in a short amount.
Hillary, do you, when you look back now that you've had some time, do you think that there was an issue either by the volume you were consuming, or did you ever use it as a crutch, or was it more just something that you used to socialize?
More to socialize. I think that in general, I always say, like, being a red carpet reporter, it's not, I don't know if confidence is the right word, but like, you're not scared or like nervous about talking to people. I know that alcohol is obviously a social lubricant, but when you are so like thrown into these extremely like anxiety producing situations where you have to spit out questions on your toes and it's with a celebrity and there's also a publicist who's about to shut you off, I don't think that really was like a qualifier for me. But at the same time, like, I definitely, you know, used to go out a lot in my 20s, but I wasn't drinking every night. Even if it was like there was an open bar for work or like a wine tasting, a lot of times it'd be like spitting it out in the buckets, which isn't the most attractive thing. But like, I wasn't having 3-hour wine lunches just because. And it's definitely a far cry from where I am now. But yeah, there were definitely, you know, days and weeks that I didn't drink either.
So how long into this experiment did you start thinking about going dry?
So 2017 was my first dry January, and then my book, The Dry Challenge, came out in December of 2020, and it launched when, obviously, we were not allowed to gather, especially in New York. Things were very strict, and I never had, like, a book launch party where I was able to really, like, celebrate my book with their people. And so when things finally eased up a bit in New York, regulations were a little bit more chill, I invited, this is going to sound ridiculous, but 45 friends to a spin class and said, we are celebrating, it was literally for us calling it like No Drink November. So it was November of 2021, almost a year after my book published. And I said, we're coming together. We're celebrating my book. We're going to do an activity that does not involve booze. And then we're going to have some non-alcoholic beverages after class. And the entire class was full. And afterwards, feedback was just like, obviously people were so excited to gather again, but they were relieved that it wasn't for centered around drinking. And so from November 2021, I just kept on throwing these non-alcoholic events. And so they would range from workout classes to going and getting like IV drips or like vitamin shots and meditating and, you know, just having different experiences where people, even like dinners and non-alcoholic happy hours on rooftops, and just having like an invitation where people could gather and not feel the pressure of drinking, or even if they wanted to drink, like they could do that after. But, you know, this was kind of a space where people were creating friendships and like definitely catching up with old friends too, and, you know, able to enjoy themselves without alcohol. So I made it I changed the name because I was just like, oh, we're getting together. Like, we're doing this. And then I just finally gave it a real name in February. But it had been going on for far longer than that.
So how would you describe then the primary mission and goals of goingdry.co?
So first off, once like the dry challenge came out, because obviously I used to work in booze to a degree, writing about it, like, promoting it, all those things. I think that, first of all, I think I had like a mini identity crisis. And then I think everybody else had like an identity crisis for me. But I was still like socializing and going out to these bars and realizing that a lot of them did not have non-alcoholic beverages that I was providing to my events. And so I started kindly pestering beverage directors and bar owners and telling them, I am your consumer. Like, I'm showing up here. And if you want me to buy a Diet Coke, that's fine. And I will, because I love it. But also, you could be making more money if you have something more elevated here. You could, and they do. People in New York charge $18 for a non-alcoholic cocktail. So it was a bit of a personal, almost like selfish reasoning, but also realizing that there are other people in New York after throwing all these events that were also looking for the same experiences. And so the mission primarily is just to have more inclusive options when it comes to menus, when it comes to spaces, when it comes to events, and just like creating friendships and relationships and kind of not like giving people the tools. I'm not sitting there and like lecturing people and telling them, here are my tips of the week. But instead, just opening the doors to allow that to happen.
It sounds like for those who are sober curious or who are moderating or who are sober, you don't like prescribe what you need to be, but it's like, here are the options for you of like how to still engage and socialize.
Totally. And even if people just want to take a night off, I think a lot of times, especially in multiple cities and all kinds of industries, and I can only speak for, you know, SMB in media, who go to networking events, you go on dates, you go to cocktail hours, and you're almost like obligated to have a drink in hand that you're being served. And if there aren't options, it's like, okay, I want to be in this space, but now I feel uncomfortable or I feel like I don't fit in. And yeah, I think it's just like really important to have those spaces where we can be. I think all spaces should be that way, but I'm working on it. So one by one.
So Hillary, what challenges did you face when you first started going dry?
I think for me, the first time I did a dry challenge was obviously the most interesting. Some of those challenges like that I faced included like answering questions that I just wasn't ready for, you know, like, are you pregnant? Are you sick? What's the point of this if you're going to drink again on February 1st? And that last one, I really didn't have an answer to because it was just an experiment for me to begin with. And I didn't know if it would benefit me at the end of the day, which very much did. So I think those were all challenges and learning experiences. I think with launching goingdry.co, you know, I think there's just like a different mentality for everyone, right? Like, I'll always have open doors. I think sometimes people who I'll continue to invite to in my events just have no interest in non-alcoholic beverages. Sometimes I'll talk to bar owners that say that they are in the business of selling alcohol. And I'm like, but I think you're in the business of hospitality. But it's not my job to tell them what they're there for. But I make my argument, and if they don't agree, then that's okay too. So there's definitely been pushback. I don't think it hasn't always been like warm and fuzzy, but I'll take the warm and fuzzy moments when I can, because those are always wins. I will say that I have partnered with a few different hotels, including the Four Seasons in Jackson Hole. Up next is the Four Seasons in Santa Fe. I've worked with the Fairmont in Maui, and they have been all so great. You can go to Jackson Hole and order a glass of Beeson 0%, which is non-alcoholic wine, and they have a full cocktail menu, non-alcoholic cocktail menu, that's available as well. And I think, you know, the more and more that people have these things available, the more people who are ordering them and the more people who are catching on. Even like, especially with travel, I think a lot of people use vacations as an opportunity to overserve themselves. I think it's great that like Chase in their lounges, you can get non-alcoholic cocktails as well. We all have seen the people who are drinking at 7 a.m. in the airport. And so I think having non-alcoholic beverages, again, is a huge plus. So little by little, drink by drink.
I love that. And I have seen more non-alcoholic beverages grow, but it is such a treat to be able to go to a beautiful upscale hotel and have like a full menu, right, of non-alcoholic beverages. What sort of feedback have you received from venues that have collaborated with goingdry.co?
It's so funny. Like, everybody is always like, first and foremost, the beverage directors, some of them are like aware of the non-alcoholic options. Some of them have heard of some, or they've tried some, and some are just like completely, I don't want to say in the dark, but maybe a little bit in denial. But overall, I tend to have tried more options than most. And so I think that the feedback is overwhelmingly positive because I'm only presenting them with the best of the best and saying, like, here's something, again, like going back to tasting traditional cocktails and being able to compare it. Like, I already know what I'm up against and I already know what the best match is. And I obviously want to give them that choice too. Mm-hmm. I will ask them, like, what are your consumers typically ordering when they come in? What are they asking for? But I always use the example too of, like, it's so much better to have it on your menu and have people be able to point to it and say, I want that. Because you're not going to walk into an Italian restaurant and order something that's not on the menu.
No.
People would look at you like you have five heads. So when people say to me, oh, we can make anything non-alcoholic, I always say, put that in writing.
Yeah.
Like, make it official. So I think that has been also feedback that bars, restaurants, and hotels have appreciated and have come back and said, like, okay, that's right. People are ordering it now because they know it's available. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you looking to reset your relationship with alcohol? Look no further than our self-paced 7-day reset program. In just 1 week, you'll gain the tools and support you need to kickstart your journey to a healthier, more balanced lifestyle. Our program includes daily audio, helpful exercises, and guided reflections. And best of all, it's on your time. Head over to sistersinsobriety.substack.com and let's take that first step together towards a better you.
So when you're curating these menus, what are you taking into account? Are there some menus you've done where you have, like, oh, you know what? We're going to offer pre-made mocktails or pre-mixed. And some where you're like, we need a higher end red wine, alcohol-free wine. So how do you go about figuring that out?
It's a great question. So first, I take a look at what they already have in terms of both cocktails and non-alcoholic options. They want to make, a lot of people want to show off their venue's bartending skills. So if they want to make those from scratch, whether they're using a non-alcoholic spirit or they're using like a base like tea or something else, I look at the ingredients that they already have on the menu so that I'm not walking into like their kitchen, their space, their home and telling them like, you need to purchase like 10 fresh pineapple every week. Mm-hmm. That's none of my business. And I don't get too deep into the margins of people, but like, I also want to make it approachable for the people behind the bar who are already on a daily basis either in a time crunch or that sort of thing. So that's one thing. Second of all, if they already have non-alcoholic cocktails on the menu, my first question is, would you be open to adding non-alcoholic beers or non-alcoholic wines? I think especially in the beer category, I think that it's the most advanced of the mm-hmm. three. I mean, you can make anything taste like a cocktail. But the non-alcoholic beer has been around and has been growing and evolving, I think, for longer than non-alcoholic wine, which can still lack in some ways. So those are the first few things that I look at. The ingredients that are already on the menu that can easily be used for a non-alcoholic beverage.
Did you know your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right. It's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. That's where True Diagnostic comes in. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part? It's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent right to your door. By tracking your biological age, you can actually see how the changes you make, whether it's to your exercise, diet, or sleep, affect your health over time. It's about taking actionable steps to improve your well-being. Oh, and if you are wondering about high-profile people taking it seriously, Brian Johnson, the guy who's working on reversing aging, and I watched his documentary on Netflix, uses True Diagnostic to track his progress. Ready to find out your biological age? Right now, our listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code SIS2025 at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, truediagnostic.com. Just use the code SIS2025 to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today.
And whether they have non-alcoholic wines available and non-alcoholic beers. Because, when you're craving a beer or you're craving a wine, that's what you're going to, I don't know, like, sometimes people will switch up and say, like, oh, okay, I'll have a non-alcoholic cocktail. But admittedly, I know, and, like, my friends, too, will be like, oh, I would have had a non-alcoholic wine, but the only thing they have is the foolproof version. So I guess that's what we're ordering.
I was shocked to learn this week that my boyfriend is not sober, but he has really, really changed how he drinks and how much he drinks. And Sonia, you'll be interested to hear this too. Yeah. The other day, like, I thought he was drinking beer, and then he wasn't.
He was drinking
non-alcoholic beer, and I was like, "What? Why?"
Wow.
And hello. Yeah, I was like, "What?" And he, yes, apparently he has it in his home. And it wasn't even like he was showing it off to me, being like, look at me not drinking. Like, it was just an afterthought. And he said to me, you know, Kathleen, non-alcoholic beers have really evolved over the years.
So you guys are coming next week. I'm going to get him some non-alcoholic beer.
Yes, exactly.
I'm so excited.
Do you know what brand he was drinking?
No, I have no idea.
I'm going to put a bet and say that he was probably drinking Athletic because
it is
It's like the highest selling beer in Whole Foods.
Really?
Like beer. Not non-alcoholic. Yeah. They're out of Connecticut. They have like blown up. Don't quote me on this, but I feel like they are worth like $500 million. And they've only been around for like a couple of years.
And it tastes like, because I don't like beer. So I never did, even when I was drinking. And I can't imagine I would now. But it tastes like beer, right? Like, is that it? It tastes like beer?
I got to admit, I'm not the biggest beer drinker like on a regular basis anyway. But yes. And I also feel like a lot of them have the taste of beer, but it doesn't have that aftertaste. That I don't know what it is, but that would always get me. And I was like, this is too much. And a lot of them don't have that.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. He'll be very excited that there'll be non-alcoholic beer at Sonia's house next week.
I'm excited. I'm looking on Amazon right now. I think I'm going to get a variety pack of Athletic
Brewing. Let's do it. I'll try a beer first time in 20 years. A non-alcoholic beer. I know. Okay, so I have a question about organizing non-alcoholic pop-up events at bars. Like, how is this different to organize it when it's non-alcoholic than you would normally? Would you think?
I feel like there's only positives. Like, you're not gonna deal with belligerent people.
Yay.
or getting like spicy or like weird. I don't know, maybe people will get weird, but like in a good way. I think it's just like a more positive experience personally.
Does it wrap up at a normal time, or is it like does it go later? Like, does it go earlier? It's like at a normal time.
I try to get to sleep as early as possible.
Excellent.
But I feel like the ones that I've thrown, they usually will start at like 6 or 6:30 and wrap by like 8, 8:30, like 9, or like
this.
The stragglers. And then it's like, okay, we're going home. Like, see you later. So last year for Sober October, had a Sober October like party on a rooftop called Unlisted from the Lower East Side. And we served 3 different non-alcoholic cocktails. One was like this matcha goodness. I don't even remember. It must have been like with Three Spirits or Fluair was in it. And I remember just people were just sipping it all night and not feeling obviously a buzz. Some people were like, are you sure this doesn't have alcohol in it? Because it was almost placebo. Mm-hmm. No, there's nothing. There's caffeine in the matcha, but like you're fine. Like you could drive if we drove here. Yeah, some people were just like, this actually tastes good. I'm like, what did you think it was going to taste like?
Like earth? It's going to taste like earth?
It's all the food. No, right. I will say, though, like one of the funniest things that I've, funny slash year thing, is I'll teach like non-alcoholic cocktail classes sometimes at this gym called Chelsea Piers. There's a few different locations in New York. And I've taught them like in other spaces too. But at Chelsea Piers specifically, like I was making a Paloma, and I have these like non-alcoholic spirits on the table, and I purposely don't give all of the information on the instructions because I don't want people skipping ahead. Mm-hmm. It's like kindergartners, mm-hmm. like, don't touch, follow directions. And I remember somebody went to go like pour themselves a shot of like I don't remember if it was for the Paloma or for the next drink, but like non-alcoholic gin, and they took it like a shot, and I was like, sir, that is, I don't know what that's going to do to you. I mean, clearly it's not going to give you a buzz, but that's not what that's for. So So yeah, interesting times.
For sure.
Who ever liked the, I never liked the taste of alcohol.
I loved gin. Oh my God, gin was my favorite. I used to drink whiskey, Sonia. I know. Maybe it was all the cocaine I was doing that let me do it.
You couldn't taste it. Your palate was numb. That's what it was.
I don't know what to say.
Hillary, can you talk to us a little bit about the difference between the events you've had in different cities? So the difference between New York, for example, and Maui?
Yeah. So Maui, I took three journalists with me to the Fairmont to experience a dry trip. It wasn't just an event. It was like a 5-day excursion. So that one was interesting and actually really cool because it really showcased everything from like we took Alaska Airlines that and they now have like non-alcoholic beer on board. So it's definitely more inclusive than a lot of other flight menus. Then we landed in Maui. We had non-alcoholic cocktails at like happy hour and dinners and stuff like that by the pool, etc. But we also, we were able to do all these non-alcoholic, well, just activities, right? Not non-alcoholic activities, activities. Like we went and volunteered. We went and, you know, had a spa day. We had like other cool things that we were looking forward to and got to participate in. And it was just like a really cool experience. I think very eye-opening for the learners who came along. So that's Maui. I think did one in Atlanta at the end of January of last year, of this year, sorry. And it was so cool. I have never seen so many people walk into a non-alcoholic bottle shop in a matter of 2 hours. It was mind-blowing. I made a few like free spirit cocktails for the guests and I signed books and everyone was just like, super excited and like the foot traffic was amazing, which is like you expect that in Manhattan all the time, but this was like, you know, like a bottle shop, driving there are like weekly non-alcoholic beverages and their staff is amazing. They like knew everything, so very like community oriented. Same thing with Charleston. I had like a 2-hour period where I was serving Giessen 0% wines after people's cycling classes and their yoga classes. So people were like coming out of these very sweaty workouts and greeted with wine. But everyone was like, oh, it's non-alcoholic. That's great. Because there is a gym in New York that actually, I won't name, but they have a bar like, and they serve alcohol and that's like their whole shtick. Is that like you can work out and then take shots afterwards.
It's so interesting. I actually was part of a gym in Toronto that had a bar also. And this was years ago, like 15 years ago. So it's weird. How is that healthy?
It's like a work hard, play hard thing.
For sure. Yeah. And I feel like that has very much subsided, especially for like Gen Z, never participated in that. And I think millennials like were, for lack of a better word, raised on that culture and have realized that like it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
We were raised on that culture.
Yeah. We're Gen X.
As a millennial, I can attest that I feel like that was part of, you know, the 2011, 12, 13, 14, 15, like vibe was like, I'm a boss and I'm going to like go out and then I'm going to go to work. Go to my soul cycle class and then it's like never ending, like never a time to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I'm gonna sleep on my office floor and then I'm gonna go.
Totally.
I'm curious, Hillary, now that we've talked a little bit about beer, but what are some of your favorite non-alcoholic beverages, like maybe pre-mixed or in wine? Just give us a little sprinkling of what your favorites are.
Yeah, so I briefly mentioned Free Spirits. They make non-alcoholic gins and bourbons and a Milano and tequila. And now they also make canned cocktails. So I think they're great. My party trick, I don't know if you guys are Taylor Swift fans, so I apologize if you're not.
I am very much a Taylor Swift fan. I just wanted to say.
You're going to love this. So I make this cocktail that I call the French 89 in honor of Taylor. And it's like non-alcoholic gin. It's non-alcoholic sparkling wine. It's lemon juice, and it's this. So if I'm going to a party and I have those things available, that's what I will make. If I'm bringing something, I typically bring, I don't know, the canned cocktails, because it's like a little bit less time intensive. And also, like, just carrying things in New York is trouble. There's a site called betterroads.com. They have like bundles that you can like search through, and they have beers, they have wines, they have canned cocktails, they have spirits. I think they're great. And who else am I loving right now? Oh, Duomo is a brand. They're a non-alcoholic elixir. They're one of, there's like this wave of like functional beverages. And this is one that has 17 functional beverages. So they have like 12. So you're going to feel like really good. And they have three really great flavors too. So yeah, there's a lot out there.
That's amazing.
Kathleen, do you remember we had Derek Brown on? So he recommended that Aplos Ume Spritz. Mm-hmm. That is like the best thing I've ever had. I have it at my house, so we can test it next week. But it is, that is like my favorite pre-made, like pre-mixed.
Now, mocktail. You also like pre-made mocktails that taste like leather boots. So am I to trust you on this one?
Yes. That one is so good. It's smoky. It's not leathery. It's smoky. There's something different about that.
That's hilarious.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
I just met Derek in person in New Orleans. So I...
Oh, yeah.
Cocktail. I was there. I was on a panel. So I, like, spoke about non-alcoholic beverages and hospitality. And it was my first time meeting him in person because we've been, like, internet friends for a bit. And... it was so much fun.
Yeah. No, he has some really interesting takes on it because he was like a bartender before and after. And so, yeah. So I am super excited to talk about your books and your workbook. So what motivated you to write the Dry Challenge and the Going Dry workbook?
So in a weird way, I hate saying this, but it's kind of true. So like when you're doing Dry January, you're talking January, and it's not even something that I personally like noticed, because I was explaining to people, oh, I'm doing that, and then continued on to, it's obviously Dry January and I feel great, where people were like, what are you doing tonight? And I'd be like, well, I'm going to the bar, but I'm not drinking because it's Dry January. So the memes are kind of true. I try to be as like not the cliche, but whatever, I'm proud of it, so I talk about it. And I feel like the Dry Challenge was just like a compilation of like everything that I was telling people, like in terms of benefits, in terms of like random statistics that I would read, in terms of like tips and that sort of thing. So it really like stemmed from that. It was almost like, here's everything that I learned and everything that I've researched and everything that could potentially help somebody who is engaging in a Dry January. And from somebody who like didn't plan to do this initially, but like now has mastered it in her own way. One of the stats, this is so crazy, it came out of the UK, which obviously they have a younger drinking age in the US, but this like supplement company did a survey and found that the average person spends nearly 2 years of their life hungover.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I definitely already have done that.
And I was like, that's crazy, because in the span of 2 years of your life, think about how many things that you can do and like how many, you know, I was even thinking like I think I can grow my hair like 6 inches in 2 years. Like, that's insane.
I mean, you probably could still grow your hair that much if you're hungover. But the point being, like, yeah, right. Like the point being is like how many things, if you think about that, how many things has someone accomplished or can accomplish in 2 years? Like, you can't accomplish that much when you're hungover.
Right.
Wow.
And yeah, so, and that's an average. That's certainly more, and certainly some people are less, but I thought that was shocking. But yeah, that's where the premise of the Dry Challenge came from. And then Going Dry is really more about the reader. So it's 70 plus prompts and exercises and activities where people can track how they're feeling and write that down and come back to it. And I think that's really important too, because I think whether you're doing a dry month or a dry 6 months, you will remember mm-hmm. like certain details, but I think the sum of what you gather is like, oh, I felt better, or maybe I like lost a few pounds, or like, but I don't think that people always remember the significant details of like, I felt proud of myself, like when I walked away from the bar and I did not spend $100 mm-hmm. like I usually do. And then the next day, whatever it is. And when you tally all those things together, I think it's really and significant to look back on that and be like, wow, what a difference in my days and my weeks and my months and my year. Like it really
happens. Yeah, it really does. And as a psychotherapist, I love a good workbook, let me tell you. Love a good workbook. So how do you envision people integrating the workbook in their daily lives?
I think in a few ways. For one, ideally, like they would do maybe an activity, you know, an interactive journaling mm-hmm. every day. If they don't have to, that's okay too. I also think that if they want to pick, it's supposed to be chronological, but if they don't, it's fine. I think just having something, if you don't have a partner who's like keeping you accountable, I always say my number one tip is like, to recruit mm-hmm. a friend if you're doing a dry month or a dry period of time. And if you don't have that person, then, you know, here's kind of your judgment-free mm-hmm. guide and help in your hands.
So ideally, they're doing it every day in chronological order, but no judgment if you don't. And it's okay. Just right. have it as a tool to use. Yeah.
Totally. It's not like a Bible. I also say if you're in recovery and you're not drinking for life, obviously the dry challenge and going dry is not necessarily like the guide for you, because it will talk about if you drink again and stuff like that. What I'm really thinking about in my head right now is like a lot of the time when people say like, oh, I'm going to, and we're talking about like social drinkers, when they say, oh, I'm going to embark on a dry challenge, dry month, and then they have a drink in the middle of their month. And I always say, it's okay, just start the next day and like end mm-hmm. the month strong. But obviously it's not the same advice that I would give somebody who's in recovery, and I'm not a medical doctor.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. And it's interesting because Sonia, gosh, I've heard her talk about this so much, but let's say someone were to drink in the middle of dry January, and Sonia likes to talk about what can we learn from that? What can we learn from that? Right.
Yes,
and so I think
it.
That still applies, just, like whether it's like sobriety you're aiming for or just dry January, or what can we learn from that experience?
Yeah. And because the truth of the matter is like alcohol mm-hmm. everywhere. It's literally like at sports events, every part of dating is like, oh, look how romantic this is. All over pop culture. Like anything I watch on TV that's not like his channel has like an alcohol commercial. It's everywhere. It's part of mourning. It's part of celebrating. It's part of all of the above. It's so hard to ignore those things. And also, like, if you do drink, mm-hmm. it's not the end of the world. Doing a dry month is not about being perfect. It's just about seeing how going without alcohol can impact you and, like, what your relationship mm-hmm. is with alcohol.
So, Hillary, what advice would you give to someone who's starting with the dry challenge or the going dry workbook?
Well, starting with what I just said, like being just kind to yourself mm-hmm. during the process, because it is hard to give up alcohol with it being everywhere and also like being something that bonds people together. So I think it might change like how you socialize and things like that. That's one. Second of all, I think it's important to do things with a friend. Of course, if you don't, then you have a guidebook for it. But if you can recruit somebody who is going to cheer you on and you're going to do the same for them, I think it's important and it can be very motivating. You can make a bet like I did. I found that to be very motivating, but it's not 100% necessary. Trying non-alcoholic beverages is a great way to replace your foolproof ones. And I really, really think it's important to take the reins on making social plans mm-hmm. for you and your friend group or your partner or whatever it is that you enjoy doing that does not involve alcohol. I would always say, like, bring that to your friends. Do you like to shoot hoops? Like, ask your friend to go do that. Like, when was the last time you went outside and went to, I don't know, a basketball court to do that? Do the things that you enjoy. You can go to the bars with your friends, which is something that I did, but if you have a hike, if there's like a hike available to you, do that. Get out there and like still hang out with the same people. Just switch your atmosphere.
For sure. So like plan ahead and yeah, I get that. So Hillary, can you tell us about your new book?
I can tell you that it is really about the reader. Like there's so much in there that I think people will have opportunities to reflect on like different parts mm-hmm. of their journey. I know it's not like giving that much, but I promise there's like a lot of good stuff in there. Lauren Bostick, she is a podcaster and a New York Times bestseller and an entrepreneur. She wrote the foreword, which is really exciting because she's not herself sober, but she went on a stint with her husband and they both gave up alcohol for a bit. So again, I think it's important to obviously see other people who have done this, who are successful and creative and social, and they've had really positive experiences doing so. I don't want to give too much away.
Like, it's a surprise.
If you go on Amazon.com, you can see like a few of the little clips and pieces of the book. It's very colorful. It's very bright. It's supposed to be like uplifting. It's not like a sad journal where you're like, I didn't drink today and I don't know where my friends are. It's like, this is great. We're going to feel good.
That's awesome, Hillary. Thank you so much for coming on the pod. And we're going to link to all of your resources so people can find you and find your events. And we just really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you guys for having me. This was
and
so much fun.
Thank you all for joining Thanks. Sisters in Sobriety. And we will see you next week.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Are you a sister in sobriety? Then reach out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're feeling generous, leave us 5 stars and a review and follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.